Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, December 28th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few short minutes. But first, let's get to the market report today. Gold managed to be up 360 today at 1142.90 in the New York spot aftermarket. You have silver up 5 cents today at 1610. Platinum is down $4 at 903. Palladium was also down $3 at 671. USDX today was up 0.23 at 103.25. Crude oil was also up 0.04 at 53.94. And the stock markets today, interesting day. I'm surprised. It dropped. The Dow dropped 111 points. Not a whole lot, 0.5%, but still it's interesting to see because I really thought they would hit 20,000 this week, but perhaps that number just wasn't meant to be. 19,833, down again, 111. The NASDAQ was down 48 points, 5,438. The S&P was also down 18 at 2,249. 10-year yield today, 2.51%. That was down 0.06. The euro was also down 0.48 at 104. European markets basically unchanged overnight. And let's see if there's any other. There's a lot of items that are going on in the news today, financial news. But before we get to them, we have 20 minutes with Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
But we talk about the immune system test today. Haven't you guys heard about this?
No, I haven't.
Not
lately. Is this part of no student left behind or anything like that?
No, not quite. But
this
is
a different kind of test.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right.
Well, it's in the field of medical science, because there's a, if there was a way to test your immune system, see how strong it is, I think a lot of people would like to know that. Or there's the other half of the population that say, I'm not going to give that a second thought. I'm just going to rely on drugs and vaccines to protect me from disease. However, the health of the immune system is really the bedrock of our life. And you want to keep it strong and you want to protect it from being destroyed or weakened. So we're going to take a look at this research. A team of doctors at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia, PA, they say they've developed a new test to see how active the immune system cells are. They call this test the CalFlux test, and we're told it can test a variety of immune system cells. So according to microbiologist Dr. Yuri Skylov, he says the test may help scientists determine how people respond to specific pathogens. He says, quote, the test could help determine who might respond to illness with a sneeze and who might respond with anaphylactic shock, end of quote. So this CalFlex test isn't the first immune system test science has developed. However, the test requires less time to get results, and that's a big advantage. So the other test would take several days, and the results were not as broad spectrum, and the CalFlex test can produce results in just minutes. Now the test looks for your immune system cells, and they look at them. They look at the specific cells that identify disease, targets the disease, and then engages the target. So the immune cells that do that tend to use calcium. And this test looks at the calcium trigger to check for the cells. So the cells that have calcium flowing through them, they glow green. And the more calcium that flows through the cell, the brighter the green color. And then the color spikes and glows bright when the cell engages its target. So if you have weaker immune systems, the test shows that those cells have a weak color, a weak glow, and they do not emit a spike. So the test is going to be used to track even the number and type of immune cells that the system is using to remove a specific pathogen, and also looks at the speed in which it's able to neutralize a pathogen. So science plans to use this test to develop vaccines, immune system therapies for cancer, and of course studying the different diseases. And if you wonder what CalFLEX stands for, it stands for Calcium Aluminate Flux Test. And the research was published in the October 2016 Journal of Nature Communications. But that's not all that they're going to be doing with this test. Got any ideas what they might want to do with this test, Al?
Bill customers?
Well, besides that, there was an abstract review on the data on this CalFLEX test, and the research suggested it could be used for other things like to detect levels of toxic mechanisms. It could be used to screen various pathogens, even in air. So it would determine a biological response by humans to those pathogens. So the different mixes of chemical components, it would be able to have a prediction level. It could deliver a rapid, inexpensive, accurate data on exposure levels and offer what a low detection would be, a standard limit, an above limit reference point on exposure to these types of chemical pathogens. It also offers results on a cumulative low exposure levels of hazardous air pollutants. So the EPA and the military are very interested in utilizing this technology. So it could be used also, Al, Melanie, for screening, a screening tool for life and health insurance agencies to determine your life expectancy. So the test could report on the level of toxins and your gene activity. So since the test is extremely sensitive, it could replace a lot of these other older tests that, you know, have expensive analysis that would be run at the hospital. So what could all this mean? Well, let's just say you work in a place that has a lot of air pollution. It could produce results on the test indicating you have a lower score of overall health, because the technology like this that invades our culture could produce a lot of limitations on people that have weak immune system function, because it would indicate high toxic readings and also abnormal gene activity. So just think what the future breathalyzer would do. Think about this. Right?
Yeah, mind-boggling. It's the canary in the coal mine. We can replace all the canaries and find out what's really going on. It just opens doors for regulation, government regulation.
Sure.
That you have to wonder, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing?
Well, that's just it. You know, CalFLEX tests could be supplying science with the knowledge of how genes react to pathogens. You know, it could be a good thing. It would give them a lot of information on which genes are more resistant to toxins and which ones are not. And with the ability for science to edit genes, now this knowledge of the immune system, it could build a database for science so they'd be able to modify human genes and therefore alter immune systems. So this is where it could be going. So the whole point of the CalFLEX test was to understand the immune system better, to diagnose patients more efficiently and limit the toxic treatments, and it may very well do that. But the other side of the application is very questionable, you know, in the area of gene manipulation, also maybe to use for biowarfare toxins. So it's a flip a coin there. But we already know some things that do affect our immune system in a negative way, and that would be a lot of sugar, alcohol and tobacco, sleep deprivation, malnutrition, a lack of nutrients like calcium, and of course, drugs and vaccines. So you know what? In the old days, Al, Melanie, the old-timey country doctor, he could tell who had a strong immune system and who didn't. Usually they would tell their patients, you know, if it took you longer than 2 or 3 days for you to get over the common cold or flu, well, that means your immune system needs some help. But today, what do people do? Well, they go to the drugstore and they take a lot of over-the-counter stuff to help them get over their illness quicker. But a lot of times those medicines will interfere with the operation of your immune system. So one popular over-the-counter drug most people have in their homes is aspirin. Now, this interferes with your white platelets, your blood platelets, especially the white ones. It disables the immune system function. Of course, we know it thins the blood, but it also blocks your fever. So the fever mechanism indicates the immune system is operating. So a fever actually means your immune system has identified the pathogen. It has manufactured and launched an antibody with your white blood cells to neutralize it. So people, when they started taking aspirin for pain, they were also said, hey, take it to lower your fever so you can avoid a seizure. That's so ridiculous, because if you check WebMD.com, they'll even tell you fever seizures or febrile seizures can occur in just 2% of small children, and only if there is a very rapid onset of a fever over 102 degrees. And even if they do have a seizure, doctors say it's not harmful and it causes no neurological problems. So it's rare, in other words, to get a seizure from a fever. And you have to be a small child.
Well, that ship has sailed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've observed, you know, by taking aspirin for aches and pains and flu symptoms, what you're going to do is you're going to reduce the aches and pains in your fever for a few hours, but you've just extended the sickness to 5 or 7 days. Because instead of using aspirin, you know, I like to use willow bark and meadow sweet because it doesn't reduce the fever. It takes the edge off the aches and pains a little bit. And also a little warm bath or two is very helpful. But when you suppress that fever for a few hours, it's essentially turning off your immune system.
Can you have an immune system that's too strong? You said earlier that we want a strong immune system. But if the system, is it possible for the immune system to get too strong? And if so, is that the foundation of some of the autoimmune diseases where the body seems to start reacting and working against itself? Or is this completely different?
Yeah, well, no, to answer your question, you can't boost your immune system to where it's too strong. When we talk about immune boosting, we're actually taking a weak immune system and bringing it back up to normal level. Okay. But what you're talking about in the autoimmune area is immune systems that have been altered through vaccinations, where there's proteins that have been altered, and now the immune system is confused. Its target mechanism has changed, and it will attack the person instead of the infection.
Then what you're telling me by implication is that the autoimmune diseases are relatively new phenomena.
Yeah, they
we didn't have autoimmune problems back 100 years ago.
Right, and
that's the implication.
Right, and we didn't have a lot of the food allergies either. You know, kids with allergic to eggs and peanuts. It's because they started cultivating these vaccine pathogens on eggs and using peanut oil as an adjuvant. So now everybody needs an EpiPen. See?
Hillary got mine. That's...
Well, what the secret is if you get the flu, you can get over it in 2 days. If you just power through the fever, you know, keep the fever wet is what we tell people, and that means hydrate, drink fluids, and what you're allowing the fever to do is burn off the pathogen and then flush it out, the residues, with all the fluids you're drinking. Of course, you know, I like to use some immune support herbs to give my immune system a lot of power and endurance, so I like to, you know, use the echinacea, astragalus root, and a ginseng, and usually get over the flu in like 2 days. You may be moaning and groaning on the couch for 2 days, but it's just 2 days. It's not 5 or 7 days. So there's a big difference there.
Well, when you take some of the over-the-counter drugs, do they actually cure the disease, or do they simply suppress the symptoms?
No, they're just...
And let the disease last longer?
Well, no, you're suppressing the symptoms, you know, the aches and pains and the fever, or the cough, or the seizing, or the nasal drip. It may address swelling a little bit, but it's just symptom management, and then the doctors will tell you, well, it's going to run its course. You've just extended the course.
Yeah.
You know? So, but listen, the question is, do we really need a scientific test to determine if our immune system's healthy or not? We have a lot of power about our immune system based on what we put in our bodies. So our diets, the drugs we use, the vaccines we may be using, these affect the immune system, and it could even create a malfunction of the immune system. So, but the body also responds to nutrients, and it helps us to recover. So organic whole food diets, organic whole food supplements, because the chemistry is balanced, it's correct. So what this will do when you use whole food, it infuses a super fast-acting nutrient to the system. It supplies organic non-animal calcium, big difference, and it provides the required minerals and vitamins for the uptake for the calcium to be absorbed. So whole food supplements, big difference, carries the uptake nutrients to the body so it can properly metabolize that. So right nutrition can bring your immune system up to par and to normal function, and that's what we're shooting for when we do immune boosting.
How likely is it that people are calcium deficient?
Most of them are. A lot of people, you know, have been, you know, kind of trained into the milk mustache thing, and cow's milk, animal calcium, it has 10 parts calcium, but it doesn't have the boron and magnesium, so you're lucky to absorb a fraction of the calcium in milk, and this is why we have so many bone problems still, osteoporosis and so forth. So, but when you look at your calcium in plants, the chemistry ratios is the way the body likes to uptake it. So it likes one part boron, one part magnesium. So the chemistry is right. Very easy for the body to utilize. And it will use the calcium for bones, muscle, and connective tissue. So it won't get displaced. And it's fast acting. You can correct a bone problem in a matter of months using plant calcium. So green leafy vegetables, oranges, and a lot of your medicinal herbs have that perfect ratio for calcium.
See, I thought we were actually we had more calcium than we needed. I thought that calcium was so common that the supplements, calcium supplements, were probably unnecessary, and what you're telling me, I was probably wrong.
Well, I mean, it depends on what supplements you're talking about. Now, a lot of the calcium supplements are made out of cow bones, bone meal, or seashells to get your calcium. That is really harsh for the body to try to break down, metabolize. Your body will take from your nutritional stores to fit the missing pieces, you know, the boron and the magnesium, so it can uptake. So when you use your plants and your whole foods, it's already there. No guessing. And easier on the system. So horsetail, lobelia, oat straw, these are also herbs that have a lot of calcium in them with the minerals. So if they're looking for a calcium liquid, we have it at thepowerherbs.com. We just started our New Year's celebration discount, 10% and free ground ship in the U.S., so you can take advantage of that. And then call for a catalog. The toll-free number is 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663, or they can visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
Uh-huh. And what do we talk about for the next 30 seconds until we take a commercial interruption, Wendy? Wendy, are you gone?
I'm here. Okay. The thing is, if you look at your immune-boosting herbs, getting back to immune-boosting here a little bit, you'll also find a lot of the minerals and supplements people run to the store to get for colds and flus, like vitamin C and zinc. But all these are balanced in your whole food products and your whole food supplements. So the chemistry is already done for you. There's no guessing. And guess who the master chemist is?
Good Lord.
The Lord. And he
can buy. We're going to take a break for some commercials. We were just talking to Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Stay tuned. Melody and I will be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, there were a couple of reports that came out today. Contracts by previously owned U.S. homes fell in November, and that's their lowest level in nearly a year. And again, it could be a sign that the rising interest rates could be weighing on the housing market. And again, this is from the National Association of Realtors. Group said its pending home sales index based on contracts signed in November dropped 2.5%. The November index was at its lowest level since January and 0.4% lower than in November of 2015. Across the nation's four regions, contracts rose 0.6% in the Northeast in November, but fell 2.5% in the Midwest and 6.7% in the West. They fell 1.2% in the South. So it seems like the only area that's done any well and is quite marginal is the Northeast as far as seeing any contracts rise. So I thought that was a little interesting report. Of course, we've also, the first time when we saw the 10-year yield begin to rise, we saw mortgage applications drop significantly in the third quarter. So, again, this is another trend that shows, you know, the housing market might be having some problems. It's getting a slow start, and you know, doesn't fare well for the future of the home market, the housing market. So, again, pressure in the economy. But I did find some good news, maybe. I always look for good news. This could be good news. U.S. shale drillers are set to ramp up spending on exploration production next year as recovering oil prices has prompted banks to extend credit lines for the first time in 2 years. So these U.S. shale drillers, those that aren't deep enough in debt, well, now they can,
now
go,
they can go deeper in debt.
Now they can go
Yay! More debt!
Credit increases, but with major oil producers worldwide aiming to hold down production in 2017, U.S.-based shale drillers are looking to boost market share to take advantage of the higher prices. Greater availability of capital will make that easier. So, again, it would be increased in jobs, and, you know, we keep our gasoline prices perhaps a little bit lower, maybe, maybe not. North America-focused oil and gas producers are expected to increase capital investments by 30%. And this is according to analysts at Raymond James. There's a couple of the big producers, Pioneer Natural Resources, Diamondback Energy, RSP, Permian Inc. They both have forecasted bigger budgets and increased output for next year. And it's interesting because these gas producers, every 6 months, these oil and gas producers negotiate the credit with the banks based on the value of reserves that are in the ground. I don't know how they prove the reserves in the ground, but, you know, that's what their loans are based on. That's how they negotiate their credit. Though the latest round of talks in the fall, 34 companies had their available credit lines raised an average of about 5%. Or more than $1.3 billion. And this was information that was compiled by Reuters. The combined bank credit for the company stood at $30 billion compared with $28 billion at the end of 2016. I think one more interesting thing here is the industry's available credit had been cut by 40% over the past 3 years. Over the past three reviews, as it contended with a two-year price route. So, again, we're seeing a little, you know, they're beginning to come back a little bit with these higher oil prices. So we'll have to see how this fares if you know, the oil prices continue to rise, or they become stagnant, and or do they drop once again? So,
an article here from oilprice.com that touches on this subject. And oil price, the headline is Oil Price Roulette. Investors bet on $100 oil. Oil prices are rising and speculators are already staking out bullish positions on futures for the next few months. But some traders are rolling the dice on a much bigger price spike in the next 2 years. Some contracts that pay off big time if oil hits $100 per barrel by December 2018 just saw a spike in interest. $100 December 2018 call option, Bloomberg says, was the most traded contract on Tuesday. In any case, some of these people, they describe this, it's a relatively cheap lottery ticket. It's clearly not the consensus of the market that we're going to see a return to those prices. They're talking about $100 anytime soon. So it's more likely a hedge against unforeseen geopolitical events during that time. Some people are betting that oil is going to go to $100 a barrel, not because of supply and demand per se, but because of geopolitical instability in the Middle East, around the world. It seems to be growing. My point is that where there are at least some people who think the price of crude oil is going to $100 a barrel. It's a long shot. It's a relatively cheap lottery ticket, according to one person that was interviewed. But here's a second article from Bloomberg. And the headline is Saudi Arabia planning to sell 49% of Aramco.
Well, they've been wanting to do that for a while.
I understand that. But Saudi Arabia is planning to sell almost half of the Saudi Arabian oil company, the world's largest oil company. A 49% stake will be sold within 10 years. All right, the initial public offering is 2018, 5%. Or less will be sold in 2018, maybe even 2017. We'll watch and see. But my point is, while a handful of speculators think oil might go to $100 a barrel, can you think of any reason why Saudi Arabia would sell half of Aramco if they thought oil was going back up to $100 a barrel for any length of time?
Well, I know they're really getting into selling debt. They're literally selling bonds. So they're changing there. I mean, we could talk about peak oil and, you know, perhaps that could be an issue and so forth. But
looks to me that if Saudi Arabia thinks they're going to dump half of their oil business over the course of the next 10 years. They're going to sell it off 5% at a time, or per year is apparently what they have in mind. They're going to sell 49% altogether over 10 years, so we're talking 5% a year. You can't sell it all at once, because if you do, the price will plummet. So they're going to try to just ease out of it a little at a time. But the implication to me is that Saudi Arabia, who ought to know a thing or two about crude oil, is not optimistic about the price going up and staying up over the course of the next 10 years. So just bring this to people's attention, because it's evidence that those investors who are betting, taking out the lottery ticket on $100 oil, are unlikely to win that lottery. More than likely, if I had to bet, Saudi Arabia knows what they're talking about. And they're betting we need to get out from under this, because it's not going to work well. We're going to sell off 50% over the course of the next 10 years, 49%, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't prove anything, but it's evidence. And it suggests that price of oil is not likely to rise significantly over the course of the next few years. And it could happen, but if it does, it will be, as I said in the first article, a response to geopolitical events. It's not going to rise in the next several years because of increased demand. It's not going to rise because of a diminished supply. It might rise because of geopolitical events. War breaks out in the Middle East, significant war. Suez Canal gets closed. God knows what else happens. That might cause price to go up, but supply and demand are unlikely to boost the cost of oil, which also... It also plays on, Melody, you were reporting on what American shale oil producers are doing. and they're having more access to credit right now, and they're going to be able to drill more and blah, blah, blah. They may be just at the point, break-even point, where they could make it at this price. But I wonder if they're not taking a risk that might not be warranted. Even though the price is up over $50 a barrel, is that enough to hold the shale oil industry together and warrant taking out more loans to pump more oil at a time when there's really a glut of oil? There's more supply than there is demand. What's going to change that to increase demand to deal with not just the existing supply, but even more if shale oil producers drill more, produce more? It looks to me, if I had to guess, I'd say that the oil industry is still standing on shaking ground, and the prices are likely, they might stay, they're more likely to fall than they are to rise significantly, in my opinion. So, do you agree, Melody?
Yeah, I remember reading about this where they wanted to sell shares, and they were kind of talking about how they were transforming the company. They wanted to refine more and so forth and eventually become the world's largest refiner, I think. But, you know, again, you know, that's, you know, sounds all fine and attractive to, you know, luring in investors and so forth, although I doubt they'll have any problems getting investors into their company. But so they do control a lot. And but yeah, it means there's changes in the oil industry. And again, you know, does this have any relationship to the petrodollar also? Whatever the Saudis do and decisions that they make that references to oil and refining of oil, you have to question
the relationship of petroleum to backing the United States dollar.
Exactly.
Right. And it really does. It's a good point, because the dollar is based, it's been backed by Saudi Arabian crude oil since Nixon and Kissinger negotiated a deal about 1971, 72, 73. They cut a deal with Saudi Arabia first and later with OPEC, where we would guarantee Saudi Arabia's security if they agreed to denominate all of their oil, sale of oil, in dollars. Well, that meant anybody wanted to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, who was the number one producer and probably still is, they wanted it, they had to have dollars. That created a demand for our intrinsically worthless fiat dollars, and that demand was able to substitute for whatever demand had previously existed, because the dollar was backed by gold. The dollar, thanks to this deal with Saudi Arabia, was implicitly backed by crude oil. Well, if something happens to Saudi Arabia, which is the cornerstone of the petrodollar, so it lays the foundation for the petrodollar. If something happened to Saudi Arabia, the implication for the petrodollar would be dire, right? Who would be demanding? Who's left to demand that if you want to buy whatever they have to sell, they'll only sell it if you produce, if you hand them dollars? If you don't need dollars to buy crude oil, how much do you need dollars? What is the value of dollars? You know, it's another one of these crapshoots where roll the dice and see what happens. Nobody can predict what the reaction would be precisely, but unlikely to do the dollar any good.
I mean, the rest of it would still be owned by the government. However, I read where their sovereign fund, I mean, it would become the world's richest. I mean, you're talking over $2 trillion. And I think what we're really seeing, and this is a big part of it, I think what we're really seeing and experiencing is how the world, we became a one-world economy, a one-world trade. And I think what we're seeing is these various countries of wealth, whatever their natural element might be, and for their lands and so forth, they're carving out the prominence where they're going to be in the near future. Where they're going to be. And I think we're seeing this in the economies. I think we're going to see this developing in the various areas of trade, in the various areas of currencies. It's going to be the zoning of the world, so to speak, I think. And I think a lot of these countries, and I, you know, what we're seeing with Russia and Ukraine and, you know, what we're seeing in Europe, what we're seeing here in the States, and I think this is all part of it. The world is being, you know, I don't know, refocused, rebalanced.
I don't even know if, but is it a benign rebalancing? There are times when I wonder, if Saudi Arabia is going to sell Aramco. All right, they have plans to use the money and the rest of this. All right, selling half of it. One of the things that crosses my mind, are the Saudis doing this because they want to help their country? Or are they saying, let's dump Aramco and get the cash and just bail out? There's a bunch of pressure here. We get out, we get a couple $100 billion for just the Saudi royal family. We get out of here and we can live on the Riviera and live fine for the rest of our lives.
Well, the world still goes on and these countries are still going to be here 50 years from now.
Maybe.
So, no, I mean, I believe we're seeing these changes. What it is we are entering a new world phase. That's what we're doing. We're entering into a new world phase. And the old things aren't going to apply.
I'm just catching up with the new world order, and now you're giving me a new world phase?
The old isn't going to apply anymore. The dollar isn't going to be the reserve currency anymore. You know, our trade agreements are going to be redone. I mean, everything is going to change. And I think, and as this change develops, yeah, you're going to see you're going to see pressure on everything. And it is sort of like we've come to the moment where they have balanced, they brought our standard of living down, they tried to bring others, they tried to balance it. And I think this is a precursor to the actual resetting of whatever you want to call it. But I do believe we are going into a new phase and things are going to change. And I think with the administration that we have now, and I think the things that are happening in other places around the world with the Saudis selling their company, half of it anyway, it's, you know, they're making plans for, you know, 30 years. When they took us off the gold standard in 71 and they made the U.S. dollar the reserve currency, I mean, it was, you know, many years in the planning for a very long future. And I think the future is coming to an end, and I think this is what we're seeing.
What else is coming to an end is this segment of the program, because we've got to take some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to bring this one more information about Japan's Takata Corporation. It was the airbags that it basically exploded. And the only reason that I'm bringing this, what I think is interesting is I have a client who had an airbag from Japan's Takata. Is it Takata? Takeda Corporation. And he was severely damaged. I mean, the airbag basically exploded, sending shrapnel everywhere. It blew out his windshield. It wasn't from the accident. It blew out the windshield. And he was severely injured in this. And it was like a minor accident. It was just like a fender bender type thing. The airbag went off and it just exploded, a literal explosion. So the U.S. Department of Justice is expected to pay up to $1 billion. The corporation is nearing a settlement. Well, they're expected to pay up to $1 billion to resolve the allegations of criminal wrongdoing related to its faulty airbag inflators. And this was reported by the Wall Street Journal. The final figure, and it's interesting, they're expected to pay up to $1 billion, but the final figure could be in the high hundreds of millions of dollars. Of course, there's always the negotiation. They only care about each other. They don't care about the number of people that were killed and severely injured for the rest of their lives.
Oh, they'd give them 25 grand. That'll be enough.
But there was 11 deaths and at least 184 injuries in the United States. And of that 184 injuries, of course, was my client that I spoke to. And it's coming to an end. But again, who's going to... are they going to actually admit wrongdoing? Is there going to be someone that gets sent to jail for criminal misconduct on this terrible, terrible thing that caused 11 deaths? And this is one of the largest recalls of vehicles ever. I don't know how many millions and millions of vehicles that were actually recalled to have this airbag replaced. So if you know that your vehicle, if you got a recall and you have one of those airbags, make sure you get them replaced because they are very, very dangerous. They explode with an excessive force, and they linked it to also hot and humid conditions. So you guys in the South are so be careful, and again, make sure you... I think they were Hondas, Japanese vehicles and so forth. I don't know if Toyota used them. I don't have the list of automobiles that contain the Takata airbags, but make sure you get them replaced if your vehicle was recalled.
What do you think about these recalls as a general strategy, as a tactic, good or bad?
Well, I think it's good. I don't know how it would be bad.
I do too. Well, it's bad for the corporations, but I guarantee you, it has to teach them. Look, you got to be responsible. I mean, the fine may be trivial. The fine may be something you can get around, but the recall, that's got to be, and the impact on sales. This is the sort of thing that's got to be a nightmare for the corporations.
But how many billions of dollars do they make by cutting corners?
No, I understand. I'm not arguing in favor of the corporations. No, I'm saying this will teach them a lesson.
No, fines won't teach anyone a lesson. Sending someone to jail. No, because they make more money than the recalls. They make more money than what they have to pay out. What will make them stop doing what they're doing is sending a few of them to jail.
Well, I agree with that.
I mean, people have to be held responsible. And it's the same thing in the financial industry. They're going to keep stealing from the people until someone gets sent to jail. So, okay, we had a token, Bernie Madoff. He was a token guy. This is what happens to you if you get caught. So make sure you don't get caught.
And if you aren't connected.
And if you aren't connected.
Yeah, right. That, which you were talking earlier about the changes that are taking place in our country and in the world. And one of the changes is, do we have governments that really do what's best for their average people? Or do we have governments that have been captured by the oligarchy or whoever and are acting basically on self-interest to see how much money they can get for themselves? And the point is, has government become a criminal enterprise almost everywhere in the world? Does it really serve the public or does it serve itself? And in the changes you're talking about, I think that question goes to a lot of much of what the change we at least sense. It's the idea, I don't know, if I don't know how many people agree with me, but I'm inclined to look at government as increasingly, at least at the top, something like a criminal enterprise. They don't seem to be working for the public's best interest. They seem dedicated to working for their own interest. And if that were true, or to whatever extent it's true, that tells us we've got at least a different kind of government than we at least thought we had. Maybe it's always been this way, but it's becoming more apparent, you know, in recent times. And what's going to happen to a world that sits back and thinks of its governments as criminal enterprises? Somewhere along the line, there's got to be, I mean, if government's going to run effectively and it's going to maintain its power, it has to maintain public confidence. It has to maintain a concept like patriotism. And when the government works against that, and they do in some instances, they do things that seem clearly contrary to the best interests of the nation. When they do that, it's bad for public confidence. And what's going to happen to governments if they can't regain the reputation, the appearance of legitimacy and honor, and the idea that they would be honest and they were doing what's best for the American people rather than the people that give them bribes, political campaign contributions. I think that's part of the change. And what are the governments going to do if the people of the world come around and they say, you know, maybe that guy was right, Addisk, when he was talking about government becoming just corrupt globally? Because you hear the problems. You see it in China. You see it in Japan. You see it everywhere you turn your head, practically. It pops up every so often. And maybe it's always been that way. But now we're getting press on it. And it discredits government in general. And I wonder, how much is that going to impact our future? What's going to happen in a world if we don't trust the government? I mean, it's one thing not to like the government. It's another thing to distrust it.
I think there was always corruption in any political, whether it be city, state, you know, county. But the governments around the world, I mean, they weren't as large, they weren't as huge. And I think when you get these governments that are so huge with no account, there's no accountability.
I understand.
And that's the importance of having gold and silver as your money, because there was accountability. Governments had to account. So your corruption was to some degree limited.
Yep.
And so once they took that away, for the sake of the people, to give them all kinds of benefits.
Allegedly for the sake of the people, but maybe for the sake of the government, or the bankers, or the oligarchy, or who knows whose sake it was for.
Without the backing of gold and silver, it led to no accountability, and I think that the government continues to grow, and the corruption becomes, you know, just kind of a second nature. It's grown its own beast inside. Now, I do believe there's people in Washington. I believe there's some good people in there that, you know, when they go there anyway, they do try to do their best. I believe they have the best interest of maybe their constituents at heart. But I think some of the bigger ones just kind of, like the shark, just eat the little fish, and, you know, so therefore, you know, they don't have much impact. And again, until our problems won't go away, we can't fix the problems. There's two things.
Well, this,
there's
this
only two things.
This business of corruption and immorality is a big part of the problem. And we don't see that. Most people don't see it. A lot of people, even if you think about it, you wonder if that's an accurate statement. And I wonder about it myself, but I look at it and think, you know, I think maybe this issue of morality is far more important than a lot of people suppose. We've had, you talk about accountability. There have been reports that something like $6 trillion, maybe even $9 trillion, I don't remember the number, of dollars that have disappeared from the Pentagon. Is anybody going to be held accountable for that? Or was, oh, well, it's only $6-9 trillion. What, somebody ripped us off for $6 or $9 trillion. Let's go issue some traffic tickets and we'll make it up off the taxpayers. I mean, that should be ground. Someone should be executed. Maybe a bunch of people ought to be lined up.
Well, I agree.
Nothing's being done.
It's just not there. It's in everywhere, and it's the people.
No, I know, but it's an
example. But you know
it's a
what,
classic
Al?
Example.
Let me tell you something.
Trillions of dollars
disappear,
and nobody seems to care.
I can remember growing up, and if a politician lied, it was we know he's a liar. We know it's not the truth, and we accepted it. The people have accepted everything that we have gotten, and until we bring God back into this country, until we make gold or money again, it will continue. And I think we have basically two things are going to happen. We're going to continue as is. We're going to see little changes. We're going to have this, but it's going to be the status quo. We're going to see little changes. We'll have ups. We'll have downs. We'll have job creations. We'll have job losses. We'll have increased wages. We'll have stagnant wage. It's going to pretty much. You'll have the stock market drop from 20,000, you know, down to 14, you know, and so forth. We know that's not going to last long. But well, you can never underestimate their power and their ability to do what they've been doing. Unless we change the monetary system and bring God back into our schools and into our lives and make meanings mean what they mean and not change them just to adapt, you know, a few people and so forth, we don't have a good outlook. I mean, things are not going to be bright. We could say that this should be done and that should be done. And that's fine. But look at the reality of it. It isn't going to change unless certain things
it's not
going to
change painlessly. All right? It's going to change, but it's going to change in a way that's ultimately painful. And until we go through that, some kind of pain where we have to stop running the economy based on lies. You can't use a debt-based currency to pay your bills. We do it. It's been functioning for 45 years or more. I know it's worked so far. We have this fiat debt-based currency, but they always fail. And when they do, there is heck to pay. Big trouble. It's not just an inconvenience. Oh, my God, I had to wait a half hour to get gas at the gas station. No, it's worse than that. And that's what we're risking. And I have no solution to the problem. I don't think anyone in government has any solution to the problem other than to kick the can down the road and just try to avoid this reckoning, this day of reckoning. Just avoid it as long as humanly possible and then leave it for some future generation of politicians and future generation of Americans. And maybe you and I won't have to pay, but the other young people, kids and grandkids, they don't even know what's going on, but we can leave the mess to them. Somebody's going to pay this thing, and it's going to be a painful problem. And once it's made, once the pain has gone through, and it'll take a few years and rest of that, then we can get back, if we care to, on a more righteous and, you know, objectively valid path. We can get back to money that's backed by gold and silver. right? We can become more accountable. We can become more responsible. And if we do that, then we can start to rebuild and perhaps restore something that we've had in the past. But if we're not going to be accountable, not going to be responsible, there is big trouble coming our way.
And with the new administration, our problems aren't going to go away. Just as Al just explained, you know, we're going to have to feel that pain before we can truly fix anything. Yeah. And I know people are already thinking, oh, well, with the new election, you know, gold's going to go down and, you know, the new jobs, new world, things are great. No, folks, you know, we're going to see, I think we're going to see a lot. And I'm excited for 2017. I think we're going to see lots of volatility, good and bad. And that's all great for gold. I think we're going to see super runs in gold in 2017. Is it going to start January 2nd? No, I don't know. But I think the whole year as a whole, next year at this time, it's going to be an exciting year. It's going to be a volatile year. It's not going to be boring like the last 8 years have been. If you think the last 8 years were boring, but a lot of things
this
are
will be a lot less
year.
Boring.
This is going to
even
be a lot
more
less
interesting.
Boring.
If you think the last eight have been
I'm
interesting,
excited.
The next eight are going to be even more interesting. But right now we're out of time, so we want to thank everyone for listening to the program. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too